I'm the meekest guy running for president. For some reason, we're not hearing that claim made very often here in Campaign 96, and most of us common guys don't want to be thought of as meek either. Why does the Bible suggest that being meek is such a blessing? Welcome to the Voice of Prophecy. This is Lonnie Melashenko. Join us today as we search for ways to make this a better world and prepare for the world to come.
Hello, everyone. This is Kenneth Richards. We're beginning a very important week of study here on the Voice of Prophecy on the topic of meekness. Here's our series title: As Meek as Mount Everest. And all week we want to urge you to let us send you a copy of a wonderful book entitled Disappointment with God by best-selling author Philip Yancey. More details at the close, so have a pen or pencil poised and ready to go. First, though, let's join Lonnie for today's message. Mr. Milquetoast for President.
Say, what does it take to be President of the United States? Right now, there are two men who are desperately trying to convince us that whatever character qualities it takes, they have those qualities. Maybe you remember at the 1988 Republican National Convention how nominee George Bush described what he thought a president ought to be. And then he looked into the camera and said to a huge viewing audience, "I am that man." So many things that Bill Clinton and Bob Dole are listing on their resumes have to do with toughness. I don't care who we get this coming November, you can pretty well count on the fact that we're going to get more jails, more police on the streets, longer prison sentences, more strength in the war on drugs, a leaner, meaner military, more executions, more muscle flexing, more of everything that sounds like raw meat manhood. Now, friend, that's the game of politics, which is fine. Out-blustering your opponent with a show of might is something that's been going on ever since George Washington, and for about 6,000 years before that. But there's one word I can guarantee you isn't going to be mentioned at all here in the campaign of 1996. You know what it is? That word is meek. I'm the meekest guy on this platform. Friend, Bill Clinton's not going to make that claim, or Bob Dole either. The word meek comes with a lot of baggage, and all of it bad as far as presidential aspirants are concerned. Just for fun, we looked up the word meek in a dictionary, and here's what we come up with. First definition: showing patience and humility, gentle. Well, that's all right, we guess, although you don't see much of even that on C-SPAN these days. But listen to number two: easily imposed on, submissive. And right away, all 10 of our presidential candidates call a press conference and issue a denial. No way, that's not me. I fought in World War II. I stood up to the liberals who wanted to raise your taxes. Why, when I was governor, I sent more people to the gas chamber than anybody. I've been fighting crime in the streets since I was a councilman in Smallville, USA. We don't want to be thought of as meek. But of course, this raises a huge and interesting question. Doesn't the Bible recommend the quality of meekness? Absolutely. You're thinking of the same Bible verse that I am, right there in the heart of the Sermon on the Mount. And the Beatitudes, Jesus Christ himself says this: "Blessed are the meek, for they shall inherit the earth." Matthew 5, verse 5. We can't miss it. Those who are meek will get that special blessing. So maybe our Clintons and our Doles say to themselves, "Well, I can either be meek or I can be president. And if I can't be both, I'd rather be president." And frankly, when we take the popular notion of meekness, maybe we don't want our presidents to be meek. We want a tough guy in the White House. And let's admit it, this concept of timid, submissive meekness and weakness translates directly into our mental picture of Jesus. Haven't we all prayed, "Gentle Jesus, meek and mild, look upon this little child," when all along, if we'd stop and think about it, we'd much prefer, "Mighty Jesus, great and strong, beat my enemies all day long," wouldn't we? You know, everywhere around the world that I travel, whenever I go into an art museum or a cathedral, there's a picture of Jesus that certainly does look meek. Have you seen them? There's a painting of a Savior who's pale and white and timid and shrinking away from trouble. On the cross, he weighs 98 pounds. Standing there in front of the Roman soldiers, he simply takes whatever they dish out. And, of course, some of that is in the Bible. Over just 6 chapters in Matthew 11, 29, Christ says of himself, "Take my yoke upon you and learn of me, for I am meek and lowly of heart." As we look at our earlier chickeny definition of meek, easily imposed on, submissive, do we discover Jesus there? Yes, frankly we do. Examples. Jesus was imposed on. He stood there in Pilate's hall and took that beating. People who wanted to be healed, who needed miracles worked, imposed themselves on Christ. He turned the other cheek. He submitted to the cross, it says in Philippians chapter 2. So what do we do with this biblical command for us to be meek? How can we get the promised blessing without surrendering our wills and our intestinal fortitude and having the rest of the world walk right over us to get to our wallets? There's an interesting text note in my Bible right under the meek beatitude found in Matthew 5, verse 5. Here's what it says. This beatitude refers not so much to an attitude toward man as to a disposition before God, namely humility. Isn't that an intriguing thought? Regardless of how we feel we ought to relate to our fellow man, I guess we'd all agree that meekness before God is absolutely proper. We want to submit before God. We want to have God impose His will upon us. To adopt a get-tough presidential candidate attitude before the God of the universe would be the most foolish thing a human being could ever do. No, gentleness and humbleness and a spirit of self-effacing are correct attitudes to have when you're kneeling before heaven's throne. But that still leaves the question about how to deal with each other. Do we want to be meek with our spouses and our friends and our enemies? If you look in a thesaurus under the word Christian, will you find doormat listed right under it? That's a tough question, isn't it? Several times in recent months here on The Voice of Prophecy, we've been studying together the Bible concept of quiet strength, of humble power. I love stories where men and women, many of them Bible champions, are so secure in God that they know in their hearts a kind of special strength. They're not cocky, they're not blustering and boastful and throwing their accomplishments in your face. In fact, if you looked at them, they might give off the appearance of humility and meekness. But under the surface is a power that's not their power. It's power from a heavenly source. It's raw meekness. I'd like to get at that concept all this week as we explore together. I heard an old story once of a Quaker who was deeply religious, and of course he was nonviolent, a pacifist, soft-spoken, very humble. You'd think he'd be the biggest pushover on the block. Well, apparently a certain burglar decided that too, and one night at about 2 a.m. this quiet Quaker heard the noises from downstairs, a little bit of rustling and commotion and jingling of silver as the family treasures were getting stuffed into a bag. Well, very humbly, very passively, this Quaker crept down to the landing on the stairs. There in the moonlight, he could clearly see the burglar going about his business. And there was a very ominous clicking sound as this quiet Quaker cocked both barrels of a huge shotgun. And then he said in this very meek voice, "Friend, I would not hurt thee for the world, but thee is standing where I am about to shoot." Now, here was a man who was meek, but he had a big gun. He had a close relationship with another power, a power named Smith & Wesson, with the ability to protect and defend. And in the safety of that relationship, this very meek man was also very safe. He had a rare strength in his meekness. Back in the Old Testament, in the book of Psalms, chapter 76, there's a picture of people who benefit from their connection with a mighty God. Listen to these wonderful words in the familiar King James English. "Thou, even thou, God, art to be feared, and who may stand in thy sight when once thou art angry? Thou didst cause judgment to be heard from heaven. The earth feared and was still when God arose to judgment to save all the meek of the earth." And I believe we find here a hint of what it ought to mean to have this beatitude of meekness toward one another. If we're right with God, then we can know that He will save, and that we can then be meek, humble, gentle with those around us. We don't have to fight them. God will do that for us. Maybe you've struggled, as I have, with the Apostle Paul's advice in 1 Corinthians chapter 6, where he tells Christians who have been wronged to not sue one another. Don't do it, he says. It's better to be wronged, to be cheated, than to take your Christian brother to court to sue and counter-sue one another. Now, friend, we can't make a hard and fast Bible rule that applies to every single situation in life, and certainly not in these 15 minutes. But isn't there a principle here where those who are with God and who are right with God can trust Him in a matter like this? Does it look meek to lay back and allow someone else to rip you off? Sure, it does. But there are times, the Bible teaches, when that's the appropriate attitude to take. To say, Lord, I trust in You. If You want this money to come back to me, then I know You can take care of that. If not, well, then that's fine too. I know You will provide. Quiet strength. More and more, I love that biblical picture. And maybe you could understand just a little bit more our series title, As Meek as Mount Everest.
Yes, friend, it's a whole new picture of this much-debated word, meek. And as our study continues, Lonnie and I would like to send you a copy of a powerful Christian bestseller entitled Disappointment with God by Philip Yancey. Mr. Yancey explores so beautifully the concept of trusting in God to care for our needs in life. For your gift of just $10 or more, we'd like to send you this book, Disappointment with God. Write the Voice of Prophecy, Box 55, Los Angeles, 90053. That's Box 55, Los Angeles, 90053. In Canada, our address is Box 2127, Oshawa, Ontario, L1H7V4. Or you can call us toll-free at 1-800-872-0055 and make your gift of $10 or more with a credit card. Here's that number again, 1-800-872-0055. And please remember to include the call letters of this station. Lonnie?
Thanks, Ken. Philip Yancey has got to be one of the most thought-provoking Christian writers around, so please do request this book. Tomorrow we'll talk about the quiet, sometimes silent strength of Jesus Christ. Here's our title, The Saving of Judah Ben-Hur. Until then, this is Lonnie Melashenko, reminding you that it's always true, God loves you.
In Colorado, there's a bumper sticker that says, Wanted, a meaningful overnight relationship. A lot of people are looking for meaning in life, but it's not found in overnight relationships. Meaningful relationships take time. They're a long-term investment, perhaps the most important investment a person can ever make. Friends, like fruit trees, have to be cultivated, but they do pay rich dividends. Here's a useful test for a meaningful life. Ask yourself this question. If I were deprived of all the skills that I am now paid for, would someone still love me and want me? If so, you have a true friend, and you are rich. If not, you have some investing to do. How do you invest in friends? By giving yourself away, by becoming more interested in other people instead of trying to make them interested in you. We make a living by what we get out of life, but we make a life by what we give. Consider the raspberry plant. It's useful only because of what it gives away. Otherwise, it's just a briar bush. Even prickly people can make friends by giving themselves away. There's another popular bumper sticker that says, the one who dies with the most toys wins. Not so. The winner is the one who dies with the most true friends.